Okay, good afternoon. So today I was thinking to add a little bit more to our list of number theory facts. Mostly today they will be just given as theorems, but they will be theorems that we can come back and prove later using the last major technique that we haven't hit yet, which will be induction at the end of the next section. All right. Okay. So, as I said, more number theory. Again, this is from section 1.8. And basically, what this will be right for the moment is more facts that we can use in our proofs as opposed to more things that we're going to prove. The main things will be the division and Euclid's algorithm. Actually, algorithms, they're two different algorithms. All right, and one way to think about it is another way to get our hands on the GCD, which we've been talking about before. All right, but anyway, so much with motivation. Let me just give the definition. So first thing we want is linear combinations. All right, so let me just write it out. Hopefully you have some idea already what that is, but it's nice as usual to have a detailed definition. So if we have four integers, a, b, x, y, and n, and we can write n as a linear combination, ax plus by. Okay, then we say that n is a linear combination of a and b. Okay, and as I said, we're going to use this well, in several ways, but one way will be to get our hands on the GCD. And so let me just do a quick example, so I hope it's clear. All right, so first of all, notice that these can be negative, right? So we can add and subtract. So you can get something smaller than what you started with. So for instance, we could have that 2 is a linear combination of 10 and 14. Okay, so again, this is an existence, right? It says that there exist x and y. So to prove that they exist, I just have to present an example, right? So I just have to find some x and y's, and that actually is not always that easy. But in this case, I have worked some out. And so I have 2 is equal to 14, actually, I'm in this order, 10 times 3 plus 14 times minus 2. Okay, so that's what it means. So, okay. On the other hand, 1 is not a linear combination. Of 10 and 14. Okay, actually, can anyone see what type of argument I might be able to use to see that 10 is that 1 is not a linear combination of something? Yeah, exactly. Contradiction is there. So for contradiction, assume that it is a linear combination. So that means that one is equal to 10 times x plus 14 times y. Okay, and actually, can anyone see what I might try next to get now to a contradiction from this hypothesis here? Yeah, exactly. One is odd, and the right hand side is even. Exactly. So to make that extremely explicit, I'll write it as two times something, and it'll be two times five times x plus seven times y. One is odd, and one is even. Contradiction. Okay, good. All right, so we have that two is a linear combination of 10 and 14, and one is not a linear combination of 10 and 14. And that is an illustration of the following theorem, which we will prove later. And it's 1.8.1. And one of the reasons that we want to prove it later is, well, partly we're just building up some useful things, but also the main way to prove things like this is by induction. And we haven't talked about induction yet, but it is the one remaining major technique, structural technique for proofs. Okay, but anyway, it goes as follows. Let's say that we have non-zero integers. Actually, maybe I'll write it out in words instead of the... So if we have non-zero integers, then we have the GCD of A and B is equal to something involving linear combinations, and it's equal to the smallest positive linear combination of A and B. Well, maybe since I'm writing in words, let me be consistent, is equal to the smallest positive linear combination of A and B. Okay, and let's see, so did that agree over here? So in my example, of 1.8.1 here, we just computed the smallest linear combination of 10 and 14, smallest positive linear combination of 10 and 14. So is it clear what that is? So if I just copy exactly this phrase here, smallest positive linear combination of A and B, smallest positive linear combination of, and my A and B will be 10 and 14, just like I have been doing in my previous example. Okay, so I claim that if I look at this computation, I can see what that is. And is that clear? Yeah, because everyone see that? So, right? Because I showed that two is a linear combination. There's only one smaller positive number, and that's one, and it's not. Okay, so that's it. So I'm done. So it's got to be, two is the smallest positive linear combination that is a linear combination. So is two, okay? And also, the GCD, which we've computed before, of 10 and 14 is equal to 2, so it worked, okay? So that is what the theorem is telling me. Any questions about the statement of that theorem? Okay, so again, I'm not going to prove it now, but we'll prove it later. So this is just a theorem that we will be able to use to prove other things. Okay, and let me add, I'm going to give three theorems today that we'll be able to use to prove other things that we'll prove later using induction, or at least a couple of them I'll prove. All three of them we could prove, and we'll just see about time whether we actually come back and do all of them, but any three of these can be proved by, any of these three can be proved by induction. So here's the second one. And this is actually theorem 2.5.1. So it comes up in the text as an example of induction. And this is the division algorithm. And it says, whenever we have non-zero integers, just like above, then there's a unique pair of integers Q and R okay, and there are two things that I would like to demand, actually three. So one is that we have divided, so we have B is equal to A times Q, whoops, that's a Q, plus R, okay? And the second one is that we're restricted on what R is equal to, so R lies between zero and the size of A, okay? Yeah, so let me just do a quick example. So this is the two that we already had, so we already got them. So we have B is equal to, so A is equal to 10 and B is equal to 14, then we write out this equation here, B is equal to A times Q plus R. So I hope it's clear what the answers are here. So 14 is equal to 10. And is it clear what the Q and the R are gonna have to be here? It says that they're unique. So there's only one choice. Right, it's gotta be 1 and 4. So everyone see that? So the, And of course that equation would still be true if I took like 0 and 14, but then the second one wouldn't be, and 4 has got to be less than 10 and bigger than or equal to 0, right? So that's the division, okay? Any questions about that notation? Okay, so then what we're gonna do next is apply it repeatedly, okay? And this is Euclid's algorithm. And let me start by just doing an example, and then I'll run through the notation, and then I'll write a theorem about it, okay? And then we'll have everything under control. So Euclid's algorithm example, and maybe I'll let you guys try an example in the breakout rooms too. So Euclid's algorithm example. Okay, and I'm actually gonna use the pair that I started with. So I'm just gonna write out this table of numbers, and then we'll try to justify what we did. So I'm gonna start with this equation that I just wrote down. So I'm gonna, A equals 10 and B equals 14, okay? And so what I'm gonna do when I'm given those two numbers, I'm gonna start with exactly what I did above. So I'm gonna do this division algorithm. So I have 14 is equal to 10 times 1 plus 4. Okay, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to shift this 10 down over to here and the 4 over to here and keep going. All right, so then I get 10 is equal to 4 times something plus something. And actually, can anyone see what those two numbers need to be to be the unique pair Q and R with my division algorithm here?
Yeah, two and two.
Exactly, right? So does everyone see that? So I have to divide it as many times as I can. And so that's going to get me to a two here. And that's eight. And so I've got two more. Okay, so everyone see that? And so then what I'm going to do is keep going. And so I'm going to take this four, and it's going to come down here now. And then this two is going to come down into where the four was. And I'm going to get four is equal to, and then what's this last one going to be?
Times two plus zero.
Exactly. Actually, I'm not even going to write the zero just for because that makes this a particularly clean looking when we're done, okay? Because this is the one we're going to care about. Okay, so this is an example of his algorithm, and this is the thing that we're most interested in. And this goes by the name of RK. Okay, so now let me introduce some notation that gets you that table, all right? So the notation, maybe I'll put it over here. For Euclid's algorithm. Okay, so I'm just going to write down the same table that I had over here before. So first, this 14 goes by the name of B. So I'm going to start with B is equal to. Okay, and then the 10 goes by the name of A. So it's going to go A, and now I have a new thing. Okay, and this is my notation. So this is going to be the Q, right? Because this comes from my RQ. But there's going to be a whole bunch of them, so I'm going to index it. So this will be Q1, the Q that's in the first row, okay? And then plus the R1, so that's the R that's in the first row. Okay, so I applied the algorithm. And then I do it again. And so just like I did before, the A comes down and the R1 comes down and I repeat. So then I get A is equal to R1 times, and now I'm in the second row, so I get a Q2 and I get an R2, okay? And I continue. So then the R1 comes down and the R2 comes down and I get R1 is equal to R2 times Q3 plus R3. Okay, and I just keep going. All right, until I get to RK minus 2 is equal to RK minus 1. Times QK, this is going to be the kth row plus RK, okay? And then I do one more. I finally end up with RK is equal to, RK minus one is equal to RK times QK plus one. And there's no remainder, so with zero, just like I did over here. Okay. All right. So this is my notation. And so if I track through my notation over here, here I have my Qs, right? So Q1 is equal to one, Q2 is equal to two, and Q3 is equal to two. K is equal to two, and RK is equal to two. Okay, so that's just tracking through my notation. So is that clear that when I try to read off of this table from this notation over here, this is what I get. Here are my Qs. This is the row in which K is the row in which this last non-zero one occurs, and RK is two. Any questions about that notation? Okay, let me state a theorem and then give you an example to try in a breakout room just on your own. So so here's the theorem. Actually, can anyone guess what theorem should be? So where else have we seen this number RK here, this two? Right, so we started with the 10 and 14, did some work, and we got a 2.
It's from the linear combination.
Mm-hmm. It's the smallest positive linear combination, right? And it's also the GCD, right? So all three of these are the same two, and that's our theorem. Okay, so so this says theorem 1.8.2. If b is greater than a is greater than zero, are integers. Then the GCD of A and B is equal to RK, which is from the Euclid's algorithm. Okay, so it's yet another way to get the GCD. We can get it as the smallest positive linear combination. We can get it however we did it before as the largest divisor. And we can also get it by this explicit, if somewhat lengthy, algorithm. So let me just let you guys try that. So so the breakout room. So apply Euclid's algorithm. To let's see, so let me take B equals, let me do one that we did that last time. So let's see, how about 256? And so that should be greater than or equal to A, which will be equal to 81, which is positive. Okay, and so what's RK gonna be in this case?
It'll be one.
Right, exactly. Does everyone see that? So we're eventually going to get down to one. All right, so let's just try it. So find RK equals one, and as long as you're at it, find K, which is less clear what that is, and the Qs. Okay. All right, so let me just give you a few minutes to just try that. It's kind of satisfying just to try it out and see that it works. I'll give you maybe 3 minutes. Okay, great. So let's see, did people get it? So what, so hopefully we got our k was equal to one. What did people get for k? Okay, I see someone has gotten three. All right. Okay, and let's just try it. So so when we write it out, what's the first line of this algorithm going to give us? Well, okay, just part of the cues. What's the list of cues that we got? One, I see. Okay, so let's just try that. So that would mean that we have 256 is supposed to be equal to 81 times are those the Q's or the R's? Thank you, those are the R's. Thank you, yes, better. Okay, very good. Okay, so so we should have plus 13. And what about the Q's? What are the Q values? Three, six, four, and three. Okay, let's just try that. So it says 3, 6, 4, and 3. And I see 13, 3, and 1. Okay, and this 13 should go here, here, and here. And the 3 should go here, here, and here. And 81 should go there, right? Because everything is along those diagonals. So then I just reconstruct it all, and I should have an equals go down here. Times go down here. Oops, I dropped one of my ones. And then pluses go down here, right? And then those should all be correct. Okay, does everyone agree? Did everyone get that? All right, and so sure enough, this is our K, which is equal to the GCD of 256. And 81. Okay, any questions about that? So that's a useful algorithm. It's actually useful for several other things as well as finding the GCD, as it turns out. And I'll show you an example of that in a minute. But first, let's just try a proof that uses some of this material. All right, so claim. And I guess this is actually 1.8.3 in the text. All right, so it says that if we have three integers and one of them is a prime, so if a, b, and p are integers, with p prime, okay, and we have these following divisibilities. P divides the product AB, then P divides A, or P divides B. Okay. All right, so let's just try dealing with that as we normally would. So first we want to understand what's going on. All right, and so we can try a few examples. So I don't know, we could try something like P is equal to 3 and A and B. So if it's going to divide the product, I got four, but I have to somehow get the three over here. And sure enough, it works. It divides 36, it divides one of the other. But if it's not prime, of course, it might fail. So if P is equal to, say, 6, not prime, and A is equal to 4, and B is equal to 9, so then AB is equal to 36, then I have that P divides AB, but not A or B. So actually, why would I want to check something like that? So it tells me something about when I go through and try to do this proof. It tells me I had better use the fact that P is prime, right? Because if that doesn't come in, then I have a contradiction. So this tells me that it's important that the fact that P is prime really is important to the proof, and it had better come up in my argument. So P is prime must occur in my argument, must be used. All right, so that's a reminder that that's going to be true. So that's a good reason to look for these counterexamples when you change something. All right, so then we can continue. So the next thing, of course, is the logic, right? This one has kind of a fun logic. So let's see, can anyone tell me what the logic is for this one?
Yeah, we're looking at an implication statement.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we're looking at an if and then, right? Okay, very good. So we've got an implication in here. And what are our quantifiers?
The all.
Yep, this is a for all. Okay, and how many clauses do we have before and after our implication statement?
Before, is there two?
Mm-hmm. So there's two over here, right? And we have an or between them, right? So that should all go there. So we have...
before, there should also be two, right? Two.
Yes, there's an and there, right? Exactly. So we have P prime... and P divides that, exactly. So there we end up with these four clauses. So we have P and Q implies S or T. Okay, is everyone happy with that structure for the logic? Okay, and then we can just run through what those all are. So P is that P is prime. Q is that P divides AB. So that notation I used to mean divides. I don't remember how much I've used it before, but it's short, so I like to use it. Okay, and then let's see, S is that P divides A, and T is that P divides B, right? So those are all our statements. Okay, now, so just thinking through logical statements, if we are trying to prove something implies an or, what's another thing we could prove that might be handier than an or? So what's an equivalent version of this? So I'm gonna leave the for all, I'm gonna leave the quantifier. Okay, but now how can I change this implication so that I don't have to imply an or? So remember, an or is a kind of tricky thing to imply, right? If I'm trying to imply an and, then I check one of them, I check the next, that's all fine. But an or is a little bit tricky to try to imply, right? So how can I replace that? Yes, I could use a De Morgan type argument, right? and I guess there's more than one way I can do it, but and that's certainly a good approach. Okay, so let me suggest this. So one thing I can do is I can say not S. So what if I add not S? Can anyone see what, so if I take P and Q and not S, oops, that's an S. So what do I need to put on the right to have the same truth table as this one here? Is that clear? Right, exactly right. I make a S or T into not S implies T. That's exactly right. So so I can write exactly as you have, because it's, I think, a clear way to say it. We're replacing S or T with not S implies a T. Okay, so so then I get this whole thing just becomes a T down here. Okay. All right, so this is one way to do the logic, and it has the advantage that now I'm just trying to imply one thing here, okay? So I'm assuming these three things, each of which is fairly simple, and I'm assuming all of them, and then I just want to check this one thing, okay? So let me plan to use that structure, okay? And then move on to the next stage here of planning a proof. So so we need to see what we're going to assume. And I hope it's clear. So we assume, and then we're going to conclude, right? So now it's kind of written out, right? So we're going to assume this P, the Q, and the not S, and we're going to conclude the T. So let me just write out what those are. So we assume P, Q, and not S. And we conclude T. Okay, so then let's just try to run through some ideas. All right, so let's try it. So what we're supposed to assume is that P is prime. P divides AB and not S, so that is P, let me write this, does not divide A. So this is supposed to be a shorthand for does not divide okay. Okay, so so now the question is, how do we make use of these various facts? All right, so so P is prime, right? So that's the same as saying that its only divisors are 1 and P. Okay. So what about the fact that something does divide something else? How can I rewrite that in a possibly more useful way? Yeah, something like this, or I tend to prefer personally just to cross multiply, just so I'm staying the integers. But yeah, but that's the same thing. So let me do the cross multiply your equation, and I'll write it as a b is equal to p times n for some integer n. Yep. Okay. Okay. Now this one. This one's a little trickier. Okay, if P does not divide A, now remember what section we're in. This is where it's helpful to remember what section we're in. So we're in this section where we've been talking about the GCD. And I claim that that tells us something about the GCD. So can anyone see what the GCD of P and A must be?
It has to be one.
Exactly. Very good. Because it's got to be something that divides P, but which is either one or P, and P doesn't divide A, right? So that only leaves one. So this is equal to one, okay? Great. All right, now why is that helpful? Well, because we have this theorem, right? So what does that, what does our theorem now tell us about, what equation do we get from our theorem given that the GCD of P and A is one? So we have three ways of understanding the GCD, right? So it's the largest, the greatest common divisor by definition. It's also this smallest linear combination. Oops, where did it go? Wherever my theorem went. So it's the smallest linear combination here. And it's also the result of the Euclid's algorithm, right? So I claim that the linear combination is a way to go. And so if I use the fact that that we have a linear combination, what do I get?
You can rewrite it as one equals px plus ay, where x and y are arbitrary integers.
Exactly. So does everyone agree with that? So this tells me that px is equal to a, one is equal to px plus ay for some integers x and y. Okay, so that's the upshot. And this is by theorem that says that the, let's see, what number was that? So it's 1.8.1. Okay, so does everyone understand that? So that's the trickiest bit of this proof, I think, is that we have that we can use this linear combination to rephrase the fact that it does not divide. We have a nice way to rephrase something when it does divide. This gives us a way to rephrase when it does not divide. Okay, so that's the power. Okay, now we have all these various equations. We can try to throw them together and see if we can get anything. So playing with what we have. So let's just see what we get. So let's see. So we have AB is equal to P times N. All right. And let's see. And I have a way of writing one. Let me just summarize what I have down here. So one is equal to just copying P times X plus A times Y. And remember what we're headed for. We want to get a something where we want to get T, right? And where did T go? So T is that P divides B, right? That's our goal. So we would like P is B is equal to something. So, and we want B is equal to P times T, right? That's our goal. This is property T here. Okay, so let's see. So let's just try it. So so here's a trick. I can take that and I can get something with a B in it by multiplying both sides by B. So I get B is equal to P times X times B plus A times Y times B. Okay, so this is looking better. I have a B here. I have a P here. Okay, there's no P in this term. So does anyone see how I can get a P into this term here, the A times Y times B?
You can replace it with Pn, Pn times y.
Exactly, right. So that Pn is going to go right into there for my AB, and then I've got a P in both sides and I'm win. So this is then equal to P times, just leaving the first term alone, P times XB plus, and then as you say, I can replace the AB with Pn, and then I'm left with a Pny. So I can now just pull out the P and I get P times XB plus Ny. So so we're done. Okay, so that's kind of what I get when I sort of play around with things until I get the right something that works. Any questions about how that stream of consciousness went?
Can you explain 1 please? Equals px plus y, ay?
Where that came from? Yeah, okay. Yeah. So
can you go back to that theorem?
So that appeared here, right? That's where it came. So this is where it came from. And so where did that come from? So we go back to theorem 1.8.1, which is what is being cited here, 1.8.1. And that says that if a and b are non-zero integers, then the GCD is equal to the smallest positive linear combination of a and b. What that tells us is, like in our example up here, I guess I shouldn't scoot around so much, but that the GCD can be written as a linear combination. It's also the smallest, but what we're using is just the fact that it is some linear combination, right? Just like we had here. And so that's what this says here. So this is the, if I annotate a little bit, this part is the GCD of P and A, okay? And this part is a linear combination of P and A, okay? And my theorem says that this GCD is some linear combination. Did that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
If it's the smallest, then...
It's also the smallest. I didn't really use that. All that I used was that it is a linear combination, but it, in particular, it happens also to be the smallest, which you can see here, right? Because it's a one and there aren't any smaller positive integers. But what we're really using is this, is the positive linear combination part more than the smallest in this case.
We're finding that there exists one.
Yeah, so that's right. So the quantifiers here are for some, that's a there exists x, y.
So, yeah, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, so if I summarize all that in terms of notation, for all P and A, non-zero integers, there exists this x and y with what we have here. So a GCD of x and y equals P times, I'm sorry, of A and B is equal to A times x plus B times Y. I don't know if that helps at all, but anyway, that's rephrasing the theorem in terms of notation, so you can sort of see what all the quantifiers are. Okay, any other questions about the logic or the structure of this proof? So then we have to put it all back together and get a proof out of it, or we would had we not run out of time. Right. Okay, maybe I'll just number it, and then you can try to turn it into a proof yourself, and maybe I'll finish that next time. But So what did we have to do here? So we figured out what we're going to do. We figured out our logical structure, and then we said that, okay, we're going to assume all of these things here, and then we're going to do this. This is our big observation, and then we're going to do this thing up here, right? And then we're going to do this step here, and our substitution. 5, and then we'll be done. So it's kind of in that order. Anyway, that's a vague outline of what we would do. And as I said, I'm out of time, but next time, I guess I'll write that up. But you might try it yourself to see if you can try to write it out. The key thing to watch for, as pointed out in section 1.7 that you should reread, is that when you rewrite it yourself, you need to keep your eyes open to make sure you didn't leave any gaps, right? So you want to make sure you didn't make some unwarranted assumption or forget something or something like that. That's one of the big reasons to write it out. Unlike an essay, actually, the nice thing about a proof is it's not only good to convince others, it's useful to convince yourself that you actually didn't mess it up. So it's often useful that way too. Okay, out of time. I will stick around for a while, and otherwise, see you on Wednesday.